It's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Stephen Thompson. On this week's show, we'll discuss The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, which has completed its first week of episodes. Then we'll stay on our talk show topic with a discussion of what makes a great talk show guest. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. So stick around.
Before we get to Pop Culture Happy Hour, I want to tell you about a few recent interviews you can check out on Fresh Air's podcast. Host Terry Gross interviewed Jonathan Franzen about his new novel. She spoke with the author of a book about autism and the myths surrounding it, and she paid tribute to neurologist Oliver Sacks, featuring a couple of her interviews with Sacks from Fresh Air's archive. You'll find those and many other great Fresh Air interviews at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
Okay, so before we get things started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. I am Stephen Thompson. I'm a writer and editor with NPR Music, and I'm here with Glenn Weldon. What do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Gene Demby, how about you?
I'm the lead blogger for NPR's Code Switch.
Now, Linda Holmes is busily seeing movies at the Toronto International Film Festival. More on that next week. But we do have her dear pal and mine, Margaret H. Willison. You know it from the giggle. Margaret, tell us about yourself.
I am, for money and love, a librarian, for love alone, a social media bon vivant, and one half of Two Bossy Dames. And it seems now I've got like a great side gig as just like your meat free Linda Holmes replacement.
You are. It's good to have a backup. Linda like tears her ACL in the first quarter.
You're in, Willison.
All right. So last week, after all sorts of fanfare and months of anticipation, CBS launched its new post-David Letterman incarnation of The Late Show, now starring Stephen Colbert. Now, Stephen Colbert, of course, spent 9 years as host of The Colbert Report on Comedy Central, where he adopted the persona of a loudmouth conservative commentator. Now he is just playing himself and focusing on, at least in the first week, focusing on big-name interviews with a mix of stars like your George Clooney and Scarlett Johansson, political figures like Jeb Bush and Joe Biden, and entrepreneurs like Elon Musk and the CEO of Uber. Now, Glenn, you are the biggest David Letterman fan I know. So I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. How did you like seeing Stephen Colbert in this spot?
I am in a weird place with this show. I have never been more favorably inclined to a performer, yet less interested in the actual performance.
Okay.
And that's all about the format. This format is a dinosaur. In The New Yorker, Emily Nussbaum called the late night talk show rigid, square, corporate, dull. She nailed it. Mm-hmm. And that he is trying to bring some of his subversiveness, some of his weirdness mm-hmm. to the show. But if you remember, I love The Colbert Report. My favorite moments were those when the mask dropped and mm-hmm. you saw behind this persona, you saw that he really enjoyed a joke. Mm-hmm. Or, crucially, you would see during an interview with someone that his persona would not like, you saw respect and admiration. And that was really cool. This, there's no mask. He brought the ego more or less intact. He makes a lot of that. Makes a lot of joke about his narcissism and
sure.
there's photos of himself all over the studio. I should stipulate that I don't know what the show's going to become. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what the show's going to become.
There have been four mm-hmm. episodes. As of this taping, we're taping Monday.
Yeah, Colbert doesn't know what the show's going to become. And famously, mm-hmm. Tom Shales reviewed Conan O'Brien's first show back
sure.
in the day and just decimated it.
Yeah.
But these shows become their host mm-hmm. over the course of years.
Right.
And that hasn't happened here yet. I can't imagine I'm ever going to be interested in this format again. But, I mean, more power to him.
All right. We'll get to the format a little bit more in a minute. But I'm going to go around the table and just collect a general sense of what people think of this show. Margaret, what do you think of the show?
Well, I'm going to lead with a little bit of a comment about the format, which is, you know, I'm what passes for young in the pop culture happy hour control.
Wait a second.
Come on. Yeah.
You are not that much young. Okay,
go ahead. Well, I'm officially a millennial. And as a millennial, I'm also a big cord cutter. And I think this is probably the first time I've ever watched a late night show all the way through from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, like, you people do that for fun.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things where it's like the clips that were circulating on Twitter the next day are exactly the things that I would have wanted to take away from the four episodes of the show that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
The musical performances were great.
Yeah.
And I love Jean-Baptiste and Stay Human, the house band.
Yep.
But boy, just the meat of this show was tasteless and dull.
You mean tasteless.
Flavorless.
Flavorless.
Not in bad taste.
It is
right.
not. It's not a terribly tasteless
it's
show.
It's very tasteful, but pretty boring.
Wow.
And I love Stephen Colbert also. I just think he seems like a wonderful human being. I'm glad that he has a bigger voice where he can be sincere with who he is in our pop culture frame, but boy, I don't think I'm ever going to sit down and watch 40 minutes of one of these shows ever again.
Wow. Okay, but you were not, to put it lightly, the target audience for this show, given that you never watch late night TV.
Correct.
Okay. I'm just gathering.
Or at least never watch full episodes of it. I love the bits. You know, if somebody wants to sift through like this sludgy river water and get me like the nuggets of gold during normal working hours, like, that's great. That's a great relationship for me to have with late night television.
Wow.
But in terms of the whole sludgy river water, I'll hold.
All right.
So who is the target audience for a show like this?
Well, I was going to ask, is it Eugene Demby?
I don't think it is. I really don't think it is. I should say that I shared the same sort of broad affection for Stephen Colbert. The day before his show premiered, I had just finished reading the big GQ profile of Colbert,
right,
which only endeared him to me more.
Yeah. I mean,
he talks about grief and sort of overcoming the loss of his father and two of his brothers when he was really young. There was an episode, one of the early episodes, he talks to Joe Biden, who just lost his own son.
Right.
And they spent a lot of time talking about grief, which was great TV.
Yeah.
The stuff that Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel have done really well, sort of like make TV sort of bite-sized and like it just goes out to the internet. And the stuff that makes Colbert, or at least makes this show, when it is interesting, needs like 8 or 9 minutes to sort of percolate and for you to metabolize. And so I don't know if it will have the same sort of shareability. I wonder like how it goes out into the world, if it'll have the same sort of traction on social media and other places.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. The several things that stood out for me as highlights of those first four episodes, clearly the Biden interview, which is mesmerizing. Now, it's mesmerizing in large part because of Biden himself,
right,
who has the magnetism of a longtime national politician and the relatability of having gone through a terrible, terrible loss and does not come off as a politician in that time, even though, of course, there is an element of political performance to anything a career politician does on television.
Mm-hmm.
That interview is great, but it's great because of Biden.
Mm-hmm.
What made it, I think, the best of all the interviews that Colbert has done in those first 4 days, and now I'm talking about my own thoughts on the show, it's a very interview-centric show. But he's still nervous. The stakes are really high, and he does this thing that a lot of nervous people do when they're interviewing when the stakes are very high, which is he keeps interrupting.
Yeah.
And he keeps jumping in and cutting them off.
I know it's the same thing.
And at one point, he's interviewing Jeb Bush, and he alludes to the fact, like, we're going to talk about Donald Trump. We're going to get to Donald Trump. And just as they're about to kind of edge into where he's going to talk about Donald Trump, Colbert kind of cuts him off and redirects him, and that interview ends up being very, very dull.
I wonder if that's like a vestige of the old character, because that was one of the things he did as Stephen Colbert, with air quotes. Like, he would jump in and sort of redirect the conversation. Some of the people we know in the building who've been on the show as guests have said, like, on the old show, his whole thing was like, I'm a buffoon. I'm trying to stop you from saying the thing you want to say. And I wonder if that's just like, that's a tick he is not.
That he hasn't fully shaken that out.
Right.
Some of the other stuff that stood out, I agree about Jean-Baptiste, the Kendrick Lamar performance. Like, Lamar clearly crafted a distinct performance for the sake of this show, and it's long. A lot of musical numbers on late night talk shows are very compressed, and over the course of the week he has Kendrick Lamar, he has Toby Keith, he has Paul Simon. He's going very omnivorous in his musical choices, but he's giving them a chance to breathe a little bit, which I do like. I don't have as negative a sense of this show, I think, as you nice people do. I think in part because I have such goodwill for Stephen Colbert, and in part because part of where this show seems to be going, he's staking out some of the same territory as Jimmy Fallon in terms of he's nice. And I think in real life, Stephen Colbert is a nice person, and he's bringing a sense of niceness to these interviews that I think it's very affable and appealing in a way that has me rooting for the show as well as him.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the Biden interview was not necessarily like exactly what one expects from a late night television interview, but I found it incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And watching that was an inspiring moment for me, because not only was it two men talking about grief, but it was also two liberal, politically liberal men talking earnestly about their religious faith in a way that didn't feel like a performative sham.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if he can even just be a more public face of liberal, political, religious faith, that would be astounding, because that's something we're really missing in the pop culture dialogue these days.
That's a great point, yeah.
Speaking of things that are not missing from the talk show landscape. He's a white guy.
Yeah. And 40-something white guy.
A 40-something white guy. And now, believe me, Glenn, you and I are staring across the table from each other. We are both 40-something white guys. Mm-hmm. But right before we started taping, Gene sent around a link. Gene, why don't you actually tell us?
Yeah, so by the time you guys hear this, you probably will have seen this cover of Vanity Fair, which has all of the hosts in the late night landscape. There's Colbert and Fallon and Kimmel. And
well, let me list the ten faces on this cover. Stephen Colbert, Conan O'Brien, Trevor Noah, Jimmy Fallon, James Corden, John Oliver, Larry Wilmore, Seth Meyers, Jimmy Kimmel, and Bill Maher. What do all those people have in common?
They're all dudes. You get the range from A to B. You also have three Jameses in there. I mean,
it's crazy. From suit-clad James to another suit-clad James.
Oh, man.
Whatever you thought of Chelsea lately, having her in that picture would change the picture. I mean, it wouldn't do a lot, but just having her around was a good thing.
Well, and I think we've spoken a little bit, and this is a good time to get into this broader discussion, of what Emily Nussbaum said about the talk show format. She said it's rigid, square, corporate, dull. It's also stale, and I think the staleness may be in part, if you might allow me to rhyme for a moment, may be a result. Let's see if you know where I'm going with this. As a result of its maleness.
I think I'm going to say it's paleness, but they're so done wrong.
Man, we should just do this entire episode in verse. But is that a part of it, the fact that it's a man in a suit? It's a man of a certain age in a suit.
It's meant to put you to sleep. It's meant to be one of the last things you see as you doze off, right? Mm-hmm. It's a historical position anyway. And you know, Carson used to talk all the time about how he could only do so much. He couldn't play into his wild side. but this is meant to comfort and to distract and then send you to bed, this mm-hmm. format.
It's a glass of warm milk.
It's a glass of warm milk.
And speaking as a consumer of the nuggets of late night television, I think that Fallon does a better job than anybody else in the landscape at being inoffensive and also charming and shareable, mm-hmm. right? I mean, your job here is you're supposed to give famous people the opportunity to come and perform their fame in a way that's going to be appealing to the people they want to go see their movie.
Right.
And he is wise. He's like, you know what's going to be appealing? Let's just, like, if I'm having boring party guests over, I'm going to have them play Taboo, mm-hmm. right? Because then they don't have to do any lifting. They don't have to do any thinking. They can just do something goofy that nobody would expect them to do, demonstrate they have a sense of humor about themselves, mm-hmm. and then I get something with verve.
Yeah.
Well, the George Clooney interview, George Clooney is Colbert's first guest, mm-hmm. and they make a big deal out of the fact that he's not there to promote anything. They just got Clooney, and now you've just got Clooney. You can just talk about Clooney. And they just stared at each other.
Yeah.
Like, it was a really weirdly dull interview.
The Scarlett Johansson interview was as well. It was like, oh, and I love Scarlett Johansson, and I was excited for there to be, like, I don't know, some kind of repartee. And she's
anything.
Basically like, yeah, I'm really jet-lagged.
Mm-hmm. We have that moment of actual human contact between him and Biden. Mm-hmm. But 6 months from now, 8 months mm-hmm. from now, CBS is going to come to him and say, boy, you know, the third lead from CSI Cyber just came back from her honeymoon, and does she have stories? Right. And it's going to be feeding that. It's going to be feeding that. Because that's the nature of the beast. This thing is a beast that promotes CBS properties. Mm-hmm. And it will have to do that, and it will do that. And it's so all of these human moments we're getting now, all this weirdness we're getting now, I hope it stays. There's some really fun, interesting things he was doing. You know, the Sabra advertisement.
with the amulet.
With the amulet.
Love that amulet.
Like, steer into the weird. But then there's that hat thing, which was just dumb. And
That didn't work as well. But, I mean,
and the NFL people, oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Thud.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that lasted so long.
It did.
That was a little rough. But I also think one thing that happens in 6 months is that you've been trying things for 6 months and you start to see what rises to the top. Maybe you bring back the amulet. The amulet was funny and allowed them to place products.
Yeah.
The big hat, not as funny. NFL players, please no. But I wanted to get to another point of concern about this show, which is amiability is a wonderful quality. And it's a good quality in a talk show host. But it leads these interviews to be incredibly non-confrontational. Mm-hmm. And I found him to be, at times, like, very almost sycophantic. Particularly if you've decided that your show isn't just going to interview movie stars, but you're going to have politicians and entrepreneurs and business people, the CEO of Uber, you know, there are challenging questions to ask the CEO of Uber. And he probably challenged Elon Musk the most. And there's such a halo over that guy. If you're going to be enormously nice, you also still have to ask some tough questions, or there's no point to having, for example, politicians on. Right. You have to have a little bit of teeth, which then runs, maybe that runs against the whole glass of warm milk quality.
Yeah, but I think the Comedy Central shows are the ones that have the confrontational nature to them. Mm-hmm. These shows are network. They've been around forever in some form or another, and so their DNA just doesn't allow for that.
Doesn't allow for any kind of...
It should.
Of...
It could. You know, Ferguson was great. He did Ferguson, a lot of... Yeah. Craig Ferguson. He dispensed with a lot of the stuff that had been hallowed tradition. He dispensed with the monologue. He dispensed, crucially, I think, with the pre-interview of guests, where you get the five things you're going to say, how you're going to say them, and you get the five questions, and you just deliver. You stand and deliver, sit and deliver. And you could tell it was much looser. It was much more the British model. It was much more the Jonathan Ross school of chat show, and not this sort of the five answers. Why is this night different from any other night? That kind of thing.
Well, and what did Craig Ferguson have that Stephen Colbert doesn't? Much lower stakes.
Yeah. Right.
He's on later, and so he does the thing with the robot skeleton that delighted me to no end, that I just watched clip after clip after clip of.
Weirdness.
That.
This is what
weirdness.
Letterman had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It, back in the day.
To the extent that we will be watching. I liked it. I will watch it again, jerks.
I mean, I liked it perfectly fine. I mean, to Glenn's point, like, there's no reason to watch it, though. You know,
yeah, I will watch the clips.
I'll watch the clips. But
others will tell me what I should watch. And I will watch
it. All right. Well, I am going to venture a guess and say that a few people listening to this show are probably interested in Stephen Colbert and have maybe even formed some opinions of him on The Late Show. Maybe some of you think we are full of it. Give us your thoughts. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on Twitter at NPRPCHH. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from ABC, presenting Quantico, about the FBI's top recruits who are smart, strong, and have the best skills. But when a massive terrorist attack strikes in America, the FBI discovers its greatest fear, that one of these Quantico recruits is a terrorist. Which one is behind it all and become a traitor? Priyanka Chopra stars in one of television's top new shows of the fall. The series premiere of Quantico, Sunday, September 27th at 10, 9 Central on ABC.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. For our next topic, we're going to stick to talk shows and discuss what makes a great talk show guest. Now, Glenn, I know you've got some thoughts.
I may.
But I'm going to start here with Ms. Margaret H. Willison. Margaret, what do you look for in a perfect talk show guest?
A few things. So, spontaneity, maybe an established identity and a willingness to play with it or push back against it. They could be a figure that I could never stop learning about, like Amy Poehler. Like, give me anything about Amy Poehler, I'm going to want it. And if they're funny. Oh, and if they have a good rapport with the host, an established rapport with the host, that's really important too.
Okay, give me a few more examples here.
I love Mindy Kaling constantly. Mm-hmm. I find like that's a person I could see everything about. Justin Timberlake with Jimmy Fallon, that's an example of
the chemistry.
Established rapport.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly, of a chemistry. They just have a very similar comic sensibility and they can keep coming back and building on it and building on it and building on it. And then there are figures where it's like when you get Michelle Obama on the Jimmy Fallon show and she's doing the mom dances, that's her pushing back against this sort of established identity of like, oh, black ladies sure can dance, and being like, oh, no, actually, like I'm a goofy mom. I can't really dance. And it's very effective and very charming.
Anytime you can get someone to do something surprising,
right?
I think is part of it. Like you're not just hearing them tell a vacation anecdote; they're going to zig when you're expecting them to zag.
Right.
How about you, Gene?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I mean, the gameness is the thing, but it seems like maybe they've all decided to codify that into their ethos now. Like, hey, everyone, be game. Like, let's do something silly. Whereas before, you would get like every now and again, you would get your Regina Hall or whoever, who was just really good, like a really good sort of joker, like with the host or whatever, but have a really good sort of repartee with the host.
All right, how about you, Glenn?
Well, I don't have a taxonomy because I got layers, you know? I do have a spectrum.
Okay, good, good.
So imagine a horizontal line.
Okay.
On the left side at the far end is authenticity, and on the right side at the far end is artifice.
Okay.
So you got authenticity one side, artifice on the other. 99.9% of talk show guests fall squarely in the middle. They are always vacillating between both. They're offering you a side that's a little bit authentic, and it's obviously it's a performance. the ones that are striking, the ones that stand out, are those who exist at the periphery. Those guests who exist are pure authenticity or pure artifice. So what am I talking about when I talk about pure authenticity? Jennifer Lawrence, when she goes on talk shows, is at least, she's obviously performing, but the performance is, I'm going to tell it like it is. I'm just going to be myself. Terry Garr, back in the day on the Letterman show. Amy Schumer, these are people who are off on one end of the spectrum. The people who are on the other end, pure artifice, come prepared with bits.
Right.
Your Bill Murray's, your Steve Martin's famously comes with some bit he's going to do. And Paul Rudd on Conan. Every time he is on Conan, he pretends like he's going to show a clip from his latest film, and it is always the same clip from the 1988 film Mac and Me. Every time.
Rip-off.
And it has now become a running joke in every iteration of the Conan show this happens. Now, I'm going to break your mind because I'm going to say for one particular guest, my favorite talk show guest of all time, you got to take that line, close the circle, because it's like, you know how fascism can be pure right or pure left? It's right in the middle. There is a part. There is one guy, Charles Grodin on Letterman, closed the circle between authenticity and artifice, because he would come on and be grumpy, tetchy impatience. He would exude a feeling that he didn't respect Dave. He didn't want to be there. And it was, of course, pure performance, but it seemed authentic because that's not how talk shows were structured. That's not what we saw back in the day. And what he actually offered was a chilling harbinger of the Letterman that he would become someday. It's like he was talking to his future self. If you go back and look at them now, you can kind of see, oh, yeah, that's what it's happening. Because it put Letterman in the position of being the one who is reaching out and trying to connect, which is not his default.
Right.
And so it put the host in a different place. So Charles Grodin, my favorite talk show guest.
All right. Well, it's funny because I have a similar answer in the Letterman verse of somewhat of a variation on the Grodin, which is the talk show guest who does not give a crap that he's on a talk show. And I'm thinking mainly, first and foremost, of Harvey Pekar.
Oh, yes.
And Harvey Pekar would go on, and Pekar was a cartoonist, a comic book writer. He would go on, and he didn't seem to like David Letterman. He didn't seem to like being on TV. And Letterman was just fascinated with him. And I think that complete authenticity, like an authentic curmudgeon, an authentic eccentric, just fascinated him. And Letterman just would just fall in love. You would see him just poking at different sides of him, kind of trying to elicit, you know, different reactions, but just waiting to see what would happen next. And I think there's also somewhere on that spectrum complete unpredictability. Like, curmudgeonliness can be tiresome, but when it comes bundled with surprise, I think that makes a really neat talk show guest.
I agree.
Here is something I tend not to enjoy on talk shows. I do not want to watch hosts flirting with guests.
Oh, God.
And I know, like, David Letterman and Terry Garr, like, famously had this chemistry that played out. But, like, watching Natalie Portman awkwardly flirt with Jay Leno.
Yeah.
I just
creepy.
No. And I don't.
It also underscores, again, like, the maleness of the medium, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, ugh, these are old dudes.
And especially if it seems in any way lecherous on the part of the host. You know, sometimes playful banter comes up, flirtatious banter comes up. I do not look for my all male hosts to flirt with the women that come on.
You know, the old Byron Allen talk show, Comics Unleashed, it gets dumped on a lot because it's basically Byron Allen sitting there and having
the
comics.
Is this a precursor to Kicking It with Byron Allen?
It's probably a precursor to Kicking It with Byron Allen. Would come on and they would do their bits and he would feed them. He didn't come out and say something like, so what do you think of cocktail peanuts? But he could have. But I mean, that show gets dumped on. But back in the 80s, Paul Provenza had a show on Comedy Central called Comics Only, which was exactly the same thing. And everybody loves Paul Provenza, and they dump on poor Byron Allen, but it's the same thing. And it's just automatic. It's just rote. There is no human contact going on. It's just pressing a button that says play.
Agreed. And you just really need somebody who's willing to say things about themselves that have any depth or meaning or greater interest, just anything. Any willingness to be strange, any willingness to be frank in a way that's not artificially constructed. I think that's why Jennifer Lawrence is so popular right now and why she's really kind of setting a trend for how starlets are going to be coached to conduct themselves moving forward, because it feels like you are sitting next to her at a bar having a drink, catching up with your slightly outrageous, wealthy, beautiful friend.
Of which we all have many. Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember like examples of times I've seen famous people on talk shows and been surprised that they were as affable as they were. Mm-hmm. Like, you can reconstruct a battered image with good talk show appearances. Ben Affleck is a perfect example of somebody who I just thought was a complete D-bag. And then you would see him on, like, Regis and Kelly. And of course, like, that is a perfect environment for Ben Affleck to do his Regis impersonation and just be a goof, you know, and just blurt out what he's thinking. And
then you would see him on Bill Maher. And you'd be like, oh, no, that was all for naught.
And then you'd be like, no, never mind. I mean, that is an interesting point, that there are famous people who fit better with some hosts than others.
True.
I would not necessarily want to see Ben Affleck on Bill Maher.
Yeah, he just gets super, super moralistic. He's like, oh, he's reading Sorkin lines.
Yeah. And the unpredictability you talked about, Stephen, can also come from the host. Jiminy Glick Show, which is Martin Short's character.
I'm glad we're mentioning Martin Short here.
He would bring this incredible, weird character, and his different guests would react to that differently. Some would play along, some would just be frustrated, some would pretend like they're in on the joke and weren't actually in on the joke. And I always really liked that show. And it's so weird, though, because you have in Martin Short this amazing comic mind that is reduced, in one sense, on the show to a fat joke.
Right.
And it mystified me until I read his autobiography. And he is just so obsessed with his weight. He's just, if he goes 4 pounds heavier than he normally is, and he talks about weight all the time.
Wow.
And it's like, This is your greatest fear. This is where this is coming from.
Wow. So this is the talk show that is your nightmare.
Exactly. It's fascinating.
Speaking of sketches about talk shows, I mean, I would have to throw down for the Chris Farley Show.
Sure.
As, to me, a genuinely delightful twist on talk shows. Of course, it was just sketches on Saturday Night Live, but the Remember When You Were in Such and Such, that was awesome. It's just such a wonderful, it's funny for what it is, which is just a guy sweating and nervous talking to famous people who are way bigger and better than him. But it also is a funny commentary on how incredibly sycophantic and what the power dynamic is in most of these interviews.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, if you at home have thoughts on late night talk shows and late night talk show guests, please share them. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on Twitter at NPRPCHH. We will be right back.
This episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message are made possible by NatureBox.com, on a mission to make smart, delicious snacking easy. From Big Island pineapple to jalapeno white cheddar popcorn to pistachio power clusters, NatureBox delivers over 100 bold, satisfying choices right to your door. And all NatureBox snacks are made with high-quality ingredients and zero artificial nonsense. At work or at home, NatureBox gives you a range of ways to indulge your snacking needs. Visit naturebox.com to get your first box now.
All right, it is time for our favorite and final segment of Pop Culture Happy Hour. What is making us happy this week? Margaret H. Willison, what is making you happy this week?
Well, since I'm a very happy person and I only get to appear periodically on your show, I have three things. Number one, I'm going to do a bit of a Pop Culture Happy Hour pile-on. Linda Holmes praised Switched on Pop a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
Yesterday, I was like at work until 11 o'clock at night, and I was like, I've had a rough day. Got to give something a try. And I downloaded one episode, and then I think I listened to 12 of the 19 episodes that exist since then. It's stupendous. If you remember that Owen Pallett Slate article where he analyzed the music theory that undergirds the pop perfection of Katy Perry's Teenage Dream.
He basically, he writes like a very wonkish review of what goes into a Katy Perry song.
This podcast is that column made flesh, and I love it.
Yeah.
Switched on Pop has been really great for me the last 2 days.
Wonderful.
So continuing with a theme, going to name another podcast. And for this, I actually have a clip from Jessica.
Is there a dog in a car at a bar on the street?
Yay!
Then that's a dog that we really want to meet. Hey, can I pet your dog?
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 Please.
With Renee and Allegra.
C-I-T-Y-D.
God, it just makes me so happy. So that is the theme song for the brand new podcast on Maximum Fun called, as you may guess, Can I Pet Your Dog?
Nice.
If nothing about that theme song charmed or grabbed you in any way, like, you can feel free. Just keep on walking. Like,
just
this one's
out.
Not for you. But if that grabs you the way it grabs me, this podcast is for you, and you need to listen to it.
So it is a dog-themed podcast.
Yep, it's great. Their first segment is Dogs We Met This Week, where the two hosts talk about dogs they met this week. They have interviews with dog trainers, but it's also important to note that just like that song, it has a very specific, very informed comic sensibility. Like, these are funny, charming, appealing people who observe with detail dogs the way you would hope someone does. It's not Animal Planet, it's Maximum Fun.
Nice.
And it's so great, and I'm absolutely obsessed with it. They introduced me to a song called Superhero Corgi. Also, just look that one up. One of the greatest pop bangers I've encountered in recent weeks.
We will put a link to that on the blog.
And finally, one more thing. This weekend, I had the good fortune to go and see the opening night of John Hodgman's comedy tour, Vacation Land. If it's coming to a city near you, absolutely get tickets and go see it, because it's so funny and insightful and charming and everything you would expect John Hodgman to be. If it's not coming to a city near you, console yourself by watching the special he did that's on Netflix called Ragnarok, which is him in his persona as deranged millionaire predicting the end of the world in 2012. And it is comic and delightful and absurd. And then at the very end, surprisingly touching, which is kind of John Hodgman's brand.
Nice. Thank you, Margaret H. Willison. All right, Gene Demby, what is making you happy this week?
There's this album that came out last year by this group called Odessa called In Return.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've been playing it all summer, like every time I'm stuck in a car somewhere. It's just like very summery. And I can't really describe it any other way. But it feels like when you're like on a trip to a cool, like a place that you're excited to go, it's like moody, but it's not just sunny. It's like,
right.
It's just like, it's just moody. But it's a great album. And there's a deluxe edition, I think, coming out this week, actually, later this week, of their 2014 album called In Return. You should give it a holler. It is really, really dope. It's on my running playlist. It's on my chill playlist. It's just, it's a really, really, really dope album.
And Odessa, O-D-E-S-Z-A?
Z-A, yeah.
Yeah. Good pick.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gene Demby. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
I had the good fortune to see Kumail Nanjiani, who came into town.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Kumail Nanjiani. I've seen him before. He killed. It was hilarious. If he is coming to your town at any point, you owe it to yourself to go see him. He's just fantastic. Listen to the X-Files. Listen to the Indoor Kids.
Watch him on Silicon Valley.
Yes. Just get more Kumail in your life if you can. Separate events that happened over the week have reminded me of a Spalding Gray special that was on HBO in the mid-80s called Spalding Gray's Terrors of Pleasure. It's about his attempts to buy a cabin in upstate New York in the Adirondack Mountains. It's a monologue, of course. He's speaking this monologue to an audience, but they intercut sort of live recreations that kind of sync up with what he's saying. It feels very modern. It is also very, very funny, and it is on YouTube. Quality's not great, but it's a monologue. What do you need? High fidelity. It's fine. Finally, the website Polygon is a gaming news and review site, and my favorite feature on Polygon is called Monster Factory, in which Justin McElroy and Griffin McElroy, two-thirds of the Brothers McElroy who do My Brother and Me, that very funny podcast, go into a game that's been around for a while. They futz with the character generator. They create a character. The character generator is the thing, Stephen, where you can kind of adjust the eye height, the mouth shape, the nasal depth, the jowl floppiness, whatever you want to do to a character that you'll be playing, your avatar. And what they tend to do is either just shove all the sliders all the way one side or the other, or they actually go into the code of the game and futz around with it to create very goofy-looking characters that they then play for like 5-10 minutes in the game. Sometimes they're just goofy, ha-ha. Many times they are terrifyingly unsettling because of what happens. And they're two very funny dudes, and there's nothing funnier when they are registering their horror at the fell beast they have unleashed upon an unsuspecting world. Because these things are, what they're doing is they're taking the uncanny valley and they're bringing a backhoe up to it, and they're turning it into the terrifying ravine, because it is just creepy as all get out, but very, very funny. That's Monster Factory on Polygon.
Nice. Thank you, Glenn Weldon. All right. So I spent the entire weekend quitting Diet Coke. For about 7 years or so, I have drunk probably on average between 8 and 12 cans of Diet Coke
Good
a day.
That is insane. That
and
is
when bananas. People say, like, oh, Diet Coke, whatever, that's like that's giving crazy. It up for Lent. No.
It is your lifeblood.
Yeah. It almost literally, by definition, courses through my veins just through the sheer power of seepage.
Yeah.
Quitting Diet Coke is something I've wanted to do for a long time. I mentioned it as a New Year's resolution. It is the middle of September, so it is still this year.
Still this year.
And as of this taping, I'm on day 4.
Oh, congratulations.
But
do you
spent
get a chip or anything?
I should.
Yeah, can
I
make should.
That? I spent the entire weekend, when I would ordinarily be taking in things that would be making me happy, I spent the entire weekend, A, sleeping. Somehow extracting that much caffeine from my system had an impact on my sleeping habits.
Huh.
And B, just rocking back and forth as if unbelievably hungover.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get to consume a whole lot, though I'm incredibly happy about quitting Diet Coke. Mm-hmm. I do, however, have something to recommend. Because we were talking about Stephen Colbert, and because John Batiste is the new band leader on Stephen Colbert, I went today down a John Batiste rabbit hole through some of the stuff that we have done with him on NPR Music. And there is specifically a wonderful, wonderful piece that we recorded. I wasn't there, but we recorded at the 2014 Newport Jazz Festival. And John Batiste, when he would perform with his band Stay Human, when they finished their set, they just march off stage, still performing. And they wander off back into the fort, you know, behind the stage at the Newport Jazz Festival, and into this grassy field. And the way this like 5-minute video is shot, the first 30 seconds to a minute of it is just them walking through a field, but it's them having just performed at the Newport Jazz Festival. And we have that full performance online as well.
Wow.
And you just see them, and John Batiste is in a canary yellow suit, as is his
wand. God bless him.
And they wander off onto this kind of grassy overhang in this dilapidated fort. And they just perform a song and then wander off again. It's a beautiful counterpoint to seeing him as like a talk show band leader.
Right.
You realize how charming and talented and delightful this guy is. So John Batiste, go to NPR Music and track down everything you can find by this guy. He is a delightful addition to late night TV. And finally, many of you have asked about when and where Linda Holmes and I are going to do a public meetup in Los Angeles. We have not yet made plans. Follow us on Twitter. Follow Linda at NPR Monkey C. Follow me at I Dislike Steven. And on Facebook, we will post the whereabouts of where we are meeting up with our beloved West Coast people. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow the show at NPR PCHH. You can follow me at I Dislike Steven. That's STEPHEN. You can follow Glenn Weldon at H. Weldon, that's WELDON. You can follow Gene Demby at GD215, that's GEEDEE215. And you can follow Margaret H. Willison at Mrs. Friday Next. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy. And you can follow our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, that's KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to now. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.